This is Kate Swanell for the NJA, and our special guests today are Dr. Lee Gruner, President of the Royal Australasian College of Medical Administrators, and Dr. Karen Owen, who is Chief Executive of RACMA. Welcome, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Kate.
Why do people become medical administrators?
Well, I think what we have to say is they start off as practicing doctors,
yep.
And some of them actually continue to practice on patients. But the reason why most of them give for being in medical administration is they want to make a difference, and they want to make a difference to larger populations than they can as a patient, and it gives them an opportunity to influence healthcare systems.
Right. And policy as well, is it about?
Yes, anything to do with the healthcare system. And so people will go into different areas. So some will work in hospitals, some will work in government, some will work in pharmaceutical firms. So you do get a very good opportunity to influence policy at higher levels. Yes.
And what sort of range of careers are we talking about?
There are many, many careers. Our fellows come from a broad range of areas. So some of them, as I said, will continue in clinical practice and might do half-time management, and so they'll be specialists in all fields. Some of them will work in hospitals. Some of them will work at senior levels in government and, up to commissioner level.
Yep.
Many of them will do that. Some of them will work in big pharmaceutical firms. A lot of them work in the military. And what other careers, Karen, do we have? We do have some others, I know.
Well, if you look at our statistics, they're generally held at around 60% of our fellows in hospital settings. So there's another 40% in non-hospital settings. And as Lee says, they're in departments of immigration, departments of health. They're advising ministers, insurance agencies, running huge pathology businesses, detention centres, strategic organisations, TGA, pharmaceuticals, e-health, and management consulting.
It's a career with lots of opportunities,
yeah.
I think, because of that.
Mm. Is there a shortage of medical administrators and people coming through from the younger students and junior doctors?
We argue that there is,
yeah.
And the basis for our case is the numbers of our fellows who reach the age at which they can take their defined benefits super schemes and then commence another career through locum work. And they are placed in 3 to 6 month positions, generally in regional, rural areas, but not only there. So they embark upon a new lifestyle of providing medical administrative services into hospitals in non-metropolitan areas where it's very difficult to generally get, for the same reasons as any clinician, find it very difficult to attract them to go and work there. So we have numbers of our senior fellows who go into those sorts of roles, and we have a number of our fellows who actually run these businesses providing locum placements. So they build up very strong relationships between those hospitals and I suppose a panel of our people. We also know from our own workforce census, we've done two of these in recent years, and we've asked our members what their plans are for retirement and career change, and we've done some analysis using hospital data and size of hospital, beds, and structures around management in those hospitals. And we've come up with an estimate of about 4,500 positions where we believe there could be a trained fellow of our college and where there currently is not. So if we accept that and the premises behind that statistical analysis, yes, there's a shortage.
So how do you convince students and junior doctors that this is a career path that's going to be good for them?
I mean, we have a number of ways, I guess, of doing that. used to be, and we were talking earlier, used to be a lot easier. Medical, the professional medical manager was much more visible because there were fewer layers in between them and other people. And for instance, when I was starting, you reported directly to the doctor who is medical administration. Now we have what we have in between called an HMO, hospital medical officer unit, that does a lot of that. And often when you talk to younger doctors, that's all they see. And so part of the ways of promoting is for the person in the senior position to actually go out and be visible amongst the junior doctors so that they see that there's a job there and they see that that's interesting. Part of what's been done, and for instance, Western Australia is a pretty good case where they've been actually bringing doctors into quality projects so that they can see what the broad range of the hospital provides and they can see that there's actually a different career out there that they could take. We have at the college what we call a young doctors group, where we reach out to doctors who perhaps might be interested in a management career, and that group is going, and there are some enthusiastic people, and some of the people that have come to us now as our trainees have come through that young doctors group. And we really try and get out there and do a bit of promotion at whatever is available to do that. You know, part of the shortage has been the baby boomer that's been happening. As we know, there are now a lot more medical graduates, and so there's a lot more opportunity to get people into our specialty. And so we now really can go out there and start talking a lot more to junior doctors because there are a lot more positions available. I guess the other thing is too that we've had a problem over a period of 10 years where there probably haven't been enough positions available to replace ourselves.
Right.
With the STP from the federal government, we have actually managed to garner quite a lot of positions that we've been able to fill, and so we're starting to address that. And then you've talked about the young doctors, but many of our doctors that we get are not the young doctors. They're the doctors who are saying in their 40s or 50s, I've been managing a unit or a department. I actually want to do a bit more of the management, a bit less of the clinical work. Mm-hmm. And so we have a large number of fellows who are dual qualified and who move into either full-time or very close to full-time medical management. Doctors who are medical administrators don't necessarily have to be fellows of our college. It's rather different to a surgeon or a physician or an obstetrician or whatever, because people go into management positions often with no preparation whatsoever. They're dumped into a management position, or they decide to take on a management position, or they say, how hard could this be? You know, let's go into management. And then are disenchanted. So, you know, that's not necessarily so. And I think the 4,500 that Karen was talking about is a lot of those people that have no management training, and a lot of them really struggle in those positions. Not all of them. Some of them are very talented and they do really, really well. And they, you know, and they pick up on things, and often they'll do a master's degree or something in management. But, you know, many of them do struggle. And so there is a fellowship pathway. So, we have a number of different fellowship pathways. I'll get Karen to talk about the different ways of entry. And we also have an associate fellowship pathway. So Karen might talk about some of those too.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Yes, Lee's correct. The 4,500 is significantly comprised of doctors working part-time. So the clinician managers, the heads of the clinical departments, and we wish to attract them to the college to do a shorter management training program than the full fellowship, which is consistent with our narrative that any doctor who's in a medical management role and assumes responsibility for teams will benefit from having our training. But as Lee said, there are various ways to enter the fellowship training program. And for very experienced doctors, we have
Means very experienced in management. Right?
So pre-existing experience.
Yeah.
So we have accelerated pathways. And we go through a quite rigorous interview process for these applicants. And the aim of that is to form an assessment of their current competency in order that their training program towards fellowship be reduced in length and more focused on filling the gaps in competency.
Yes.
So we have two of those pathways. So they're based on recognition of prior learning and granting of credit for certain academic training already undertaken. So that's been a very successful pathway for us. We really formalised it in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had seven cohorts come through that accelerated pathway. So we're probably looking at close to 200 doctors. So these are people who are very, very senior clinician managers,
yeah,
or people who are already in directors of medical services,
yeah,
roles, mostly working in hospitals, and at the cusp of that career decision about whether to leave behind the clinical or formalise their management qualifications because they've already left the clinical.
Yeah.
And since the national registration scheme came in, it has, I suspect, been a decision point for a number of very senior specialists,
yes,
clinical specialists, as to whether to continue to maintain multiple specialties and all the CPD requirements and so on that go with that. And I think as we move further down the line with the revalidation conversation that the medical board has established, we will see even more impetus to decision making around these. And hopefully, for our college, those who are already working in medical management roles in that scope of practice,
yeah,
will formalise through coming to this college as fellows.
And those accelerated people, the ones who've done it really quickly, have been ready to actually sit their fellowship, and they have to do the final fellowship exam within a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm looking around the walls here and noticing that I think there's two women.
That's
and
right.
Three. Lee's going to be the
third.
Oh,
yes.
But Lee's space is not yet,
filled.
No.
What is the gender balance like in medical administration?
There are more men than women.
Yeah.
I should be able to quote you that, but I can't. I think there's about a third women to
35,
60.
And is that something that's grown in recent times, or is it?
It's always been a career that's had about that number of women, actually.
Is that a work-life balance?
Yes, I think, part of it has been that.
Yeah.
And part of it, women are good at relationships and communication and that sort of thing, and that goes with management really well, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's been part of it too.
Tell me a little, Dr. Owen, about the World Federation of Medical Managers.
Well, the World Federation of Medical Managers is an initiative of this college. Goes back to, we're into our fifth year, so 2009, is that right? We decided we would search the world for like-minded organisations, and we invited them to a special meeting in Hong Kong, which was held in conjunction with our annual conference at the time.
Yeah.
And it's grown from there that we have representatives of organisations from around the world who come together once a year to discuss issues relating to medical leadership, clinical engagement, strategy, things which are of general interest to medical administrators worldwide. So we range from Israel, Italy, UK,
South Africa,
Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Canada, US, Hong Kong, and we've deliberately gone quietly, moved quietly, I suppose, because there is high level of interest internationally in clinical engagement and medical leadership.
Yeah.
But there are very few organisations like RACMA. There are some moving in our direction, even the Americans now, the American College of Physician Executives, which has recently changed its name, looks at what's happening here in Australia as far as recognised specialty. And I believe, has aims in that direction.
But from our college perspective, yep. It's been, a great opportunity for us to benchmark and just with other like-minded organisations.
It's been an interesting couple of years here politically for health and medicine. And we've got a new federal minister now in Susan Lee. What do you, as a college, see as the big issues that need tackling in the next year to 5 years, say?
We sort of, I guess as medical managers, we look at it very much, you know, from a helicopter view and say, you know, what are the system? And there are things that are problems in systems, but we don't think that they'll ever be fixed. I mean, one of the problems is the multiplicity of funding, and particularly federal, state. But, you know, we're realistic enough to know that, you know, it's unlikely that that's going to change. I don't think our constitution is going to change.
Yeah.
So, but that's one of the issues, is that sort of funding issue and the priorities issue. What sort of priorities do we have?
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of us have been interested in that we don't do enough for prevention in Australia.
Mm.
So we do a lot for the acute and the glamour things, not enough on prevention and how much we could actually save if we work down the preventative, non-glamorous end rather than the high end. So there's some of the things that some of us are interested in. We're very interested in the issues around professional standards,
mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, most of the other colleges are interested in professional standards for their own college, but because we work across all the specialties, we're actually interested in professional standards for everybody, you know,
yeah.
for all people who are working in medicine. So we're interested in the revalidation debate and what that's going to mean. And we're particularly keen that it should be something that should be useful but not low cost and, you know, not too complex and deliver what's needed to be delivered rather than something that's going the way of the UK, which is incredibly expensive and you're not quite sure what outcomes you're going to get. So we're interested in all of that professional standards area. I think most of us who are interested in having healthcare delivery that's really patient focused and is cost effective. You know, we're very interested in cost effective care.
Are you happy as a college with the level of consultation that's been undertaken by the government in the last, well, since they became the government, basically?
There hasn't been a wonderful level of consultation, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, again, it's a two-way street.
Yes.
And we can't just rely on the government to come to us, talking about the whole medical fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
We have to actually go to them. It's some of the stuff that we've been doing in the college, and which other colleges do as well,
yes.
might I say, that we make sure that we build relationships at government level so that we can get some of our views across and get some changes made in that way. So I do think it needs to be two-way, and for people to just wait for the government to come to you, well, nothing's going to happen. We really have to go out there to them.
Can you tell us a bit about the young doctors' training pathway into fellowship or into administration?
Well, the youngest doctors would come in at PGY4 or equivalent level.
Yep.
And they're predominantly public hospital-based.
Yep.
In fact, they probably all are public hospital-based because that's where the funding is provided.
Mm-hmm.
The exception has been in the last 3 or 4 years. The college has been successful in gaining funding through the Commonwealth Government Specialist Training Program.
Right.
And private hospital settings are part of the objective to expand the settings in which young doctors are training.
Mm.
So we have about 18 training posts funded by the Commonwealth as distinct from the jurisdictional governments.
Yep.
And that has enabled the young doctor, the PGY4,
yep.
to enter into our training program. So that's been a very successful program
for
us.
So you're finding that you're filling those spots?
We fill them, yes, generally. Now, I hesitate because one of the logistical limitations is the timing of the academic year in relation to the funding and relation to the recruitment process.
Yes.
And it's often the case that we do compete with the other specialty colleges.
And to a question you asked earlier, a lot of the very young doctors don't know we exist.
Mm.
And that's an issue for us to promote ourselves. So we go to the career fairs. Lee and I have been moving around the country in the last 12 months, visiting our jurisdictional committees and meeting with members, which has been a very successful thing for us to be doing,
mm-hmm.
building those relationships. And you meet people along the way. And our junior doctor program, which is not our training program, these are young doctors who may still be at university or in that PGY 1, 2 and 3 time. We've got about 80 on our books. And we have a soft approach. We communicate with our e-newsletters and we invite them and give them concessions to our conferences, and our jurisdictional committees hopefully will meet with them. And but it still comes down to them finding a funded training post.
Yes.
So they have to do 3 years clinical experience before they're accepted.
Right.
As a trainee in our college. We call them candidates. It gets, you know, that they have to do that 3 years. So they can't come in earlier than PGY 4. Mm. And so we have a group that comes in at PGY 4, and some will come in, you know, maybe a couple of years later, having decided, I don't like that specialty or that specialty, you know, this is the one that interests me. And then it's a 3-year training program generally. Look, it's a fascinating career.
Yes.
I guess, you know, this is the thing that I think is really important. You get to meet some really interesting people. You get an opportunity to influence a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter which part you work in. You know, as I said, I work in management consulting. I've just done a whole review of child and adolescent mental health in South Australia. And so there, you know, I had a team of people working with me who are the experts in that area, and basically I coordinated the team, wrote the report, and they're carrying out all of the recommendation. Well, when do you get an opportunity to do something like that? And, you know, I was selected for that team leader position because I'm a medical manager and so can look at it from a helicopter point of view.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that we have who are working in high levels of government, really looking at being able to look at the whole health system and how should we do things differently. And if you're working at hospital level, it's what sort of strategy should we have to deliver services to this group of patients? I mean, it can be really, really very exciting. And you really can see the results of your labours. Not immediately, it often takes a few years, but it's something that can be a very rewarding career. And you work with lots and lots of different people, lots and lots of different doctors. You get to understand all of the specialties. You get to understand nursing. You get to understand allied health, which you often don't get to do when you're in other careers. So it can be a most rewarding career.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. Hopefully this will help your strategic plan
of
promoting things a little
more. Yes, we hope so too.
So, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.